It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The U.S. Pacific Command has detected a missile threat to Hawaii. A missile may impact on land or sea within minutes. This is not a drill. If you are indoors, stay indoors. If you are outdoors, seek immediate shelter in a building. Remain indoors well away from windows. If you are driving, pull safely to the side of the road and seek shelter in a building or lay on the floor. We will announce when the threat has ended. This is not a drill. Take immediate action measures.
That was an amazing story. That happened in Hawaii on Friday. It happened at 8 o'clock in the morning. And that's what the residents of the state of Hawaii heard. And for something like 38 minutes, they thought there was going to be an imminent attack. And, you know, of course, because what's been happening with North Korea is so real and so dangerous to Hawaii, the people knew that. And they were trying to, some of them were hiding in sewers. It's just an amazing story. And Hawaii News Service actually did a more expanded coverage of this. There's a lot of interesting things about this, so let's listen to their coverage first.
A wake up.
Repeat, the U.S. Pacific Command has detected a missile threat to Hawaii.
The words, "This is not a drill," burned into our phones.
People literally ran to find cover, hiding in basements, huddling in closets. One family climbed into a sewer hole.
We were obviously very scared. We have two little girls.
My wife was in tears and didn't know what to do.
I'm just looking around thinking, like, where do we go?
All this fear for a false alarm. Confirmation trickled out on social media, followed by an official correction and a stunning revelation.
An employee pushed the wrong button.
It came down to a person pushing the wrong button.
That was not funny at all. The guy had one job, right, and he messed up.
Now the FCC is vowing a full investigation, and state lawmakers are demanding answers.
So I've spoken with some House colleagues this morning, and they are just as outraged.
Tonight, in-depth team coverage on the missile alert mistake.
It is a defining moment for the Ige administration. The governor has apologized for the initial mistake and the slow response to ease the fear.
Leaders say the false alarm was caused by a longtime employee at the state's emergency management agency.
Again, it's a human error. There is a screen that says, are you sure you want to do this? Okay, again, that's already in place. Now, we had one person, human error, and that thing was pushed anyway.
All right, but he goes on to say, which you don't hear in that report, something that's very, very troubling. They're trying to put this off as human error. This one person, they said it was a shift change, and, you know, he didn't mean to do it, and he's sorry, and we're not going to take retribution. But then they go on to say he had to respond a second time because it's a follow-up question for whoever maintains that button to say, are you sure? Are you sure you want to do this? Or have you checked everything? This is what basically it says on the screen. Are you sure you want to do what you just weighed in to do? And he, the person, the employee who just accidentally did it, pushed it a second time. Now, here's the implication of that. That is that somebody, you know, Hawaii is so far to the left. It's amazing. I saw a report on Hawaii during the election cycle, and I have to say I was alarmed by the, you know, Hawaii's laid back. That's why people like to go out there. But the saturation of marijuana use on the streets with people and they, hey man, whatever. It's just, it's an amazing thing for an American state, for a state of the United States. And Hawaii is controlled by left-wing Democrats. And so one just has to ask the question, has somebody on this inside there trying to depress the response of the people of Hawaii in case of some sort of an attack? Is there someone somewhere trying to dull them to some kind of a peaked response or a strong response? Is somebody messing with this? Is this a setup? I mean, that's what goes through your mind. Well, the Federal Communications Commission, under the leadership, the good leadership of Ajit Pai, is looking into this, and so I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about it. Well, if you were, you know, in the United States on Friday, you heard something about this. Let's listen.
At a White House event signing a proclamation for Martin Luther King Day, President Trump ignored shouted questions from the press about his comments yesterday.
Mr. President, will you give an apology for the statement yesterday?
Mr. President, did you refer to African Asians? Did you refer to
Mr. President, are you a racist?
It was during a heated Oval Office meeting that President Trump reportedly asked, quote, why are we having all these people from S-hole countries come here? A firestorm of controversy erupted across the globe, from the Deputy Secretary General of the African National Congress.
Ours is not a s**hole country, neither is Haiti or any other country in distress.
To the UN High Commission for Human Rights.
These are shocking and shameful comments from the President of the United States. I'm sorry, but there's no other word one can use but racist.
Waking up to a world of hurt this morning, President Trump denied he said it, tweeting, quote, the language used by me at the DACA meeting was tough, but this was not the language used. A short time later, he appeared to walk that back just a bit, tweeting, quote, never said anything derogatory about Haitians other than Haiti is, obviously, a very poor and troubled country. But Democratic Senator Dick Durbin, who was present at the meeting, insisted the president did use those words.
He said, Haitians, do we need more Haitians? And then he went on and started to describe the immigration from Africa that was being protected in this bipartisan measure. That's when he used these vile and vulgar comments, calling the nations they come from s**holes. The exact word used by the president, not more, not just once, but repeatedly.
Okay, so that's the way it started, and that was John Roberts reporting on Fox News. And, of course, the press has gone wild. If you'd seen Chris Wallace yesterday on Fox News Sunday, Chris echoed everything they said. He set it up by the world is like, he either said it, the world or the nation, you know, is shocked at what the president said in this meeting. And goes on to say repeatedly, the president, he's a racist. He didn't say it that way. He let other people say it. But that's what Chris was doing. And, of course, it's baked in the cake, you see. The president said this, the S word. And, of course, he was calling people from those countries. He was inferring that they were that way. And that makes him a racist. It's vulgar language, and he's a racist. And this all started, at least publicly, with Dick Durbin making the accusations that he made. And could I just say, for the record, that I know Senator Dick Durbin. Oh, I haven't had dinner with him, but I am a person from Chicago. I was raised in Illinois. I was there on the radio when Dick Durbin ran for Senate the very first time. He ran against a friend of mine, Al Salvi, and I followed that race carefully and actually worked on Al Salvi's behalf. And I have to tell you, that there is no greater liar in the Senate of the United States than Dick Durbin. He was a liar from the very first. I had never seen anything quite like it. I was kind of a novice at the time. And he would, on the stump, twist and turn. And he was very good at it because he seemed so steady. He's from Southern Illinois, and he was from Decatur, and he was so convincing. But he was a liar on the order of James Carville, on the order of so many of the members of the left who just, the lies roll off their tongue as easy as anything. It's just an amazing thing. So when you see Chuck Schumer all offended that someone would say something bad about the Honorable Dick Durbin, I want to choke. He is not honorable. He is a consummate, hardened liar. We were shocked in Illinois when he beat Al Salvi. Because Al Salvi was a state senator who had a lot of integrity and was well-liked, but Dick Durbin prevailed. And I'm telling you, one of the reasons he's prevailed all these years, I know this for a fact, is because he has business connections in Illinois, and he makes sure that those business interests make tons of money. And I'm imagining that Senator Dick Durbin, like his compatriots in the Senate, Republican and Democrat, enrich themselves in the process. That's kind of how it goes. So consider the source is all I have to say. But let me move back and tell you that we are now like reviewing things and we're finding out that, well, gee, President Trump is the only, is not the only president who said something like that. President Obama in, let's see, he called Libya an S show just 2 years ago. The Atlantic report said, I don't want to really read it. He just, that's what he says. In the course of the conversation with him, he calls, let me say it again, Libya an S show. He did that just 2 years ago. But gee, you didn't hear that, did you? Did you hear that? I didn't hear that. And then Lindsey Graham, and this is on record and easily accessible. In 2013, during the immigration debate, Lindsey Graham said, he said basically, the people coming across the southern border live in hell holes. They don't like that. They want to come here. Our problem is we can't have everybody in the world who lives in a hell hole come to America. Goes on and on. Senator Jeff Sessions corrected him. He said, it's not a hell hole. It has great things going on in Mexico. We're proud of the people in Mexico, said Senator Sessions, who was the immigration hawk. Lindsey Graham, who was the guy pushing for amnesty, basically defended himself. But that's what Lindsey Graham, who is now claiming, oh, yes, the president said that. It's shocking and outrageous. And his friend Dick Durbin, I guess he's new, his new friend, since Senator McCain is not well. So then Senator Tom Cotton hits Senator Dick Durbin, and he says, Mr. Durbin has a history of misrepresenting what happens in White House meetings. I certainly didn't hear what Senator Durbin had said repeatedly, Mr. Cotton said on CBS Face the Nation. Senator Durbin has a history of misrepresenting what happens in White House meetings, though, so perhaps we shouldn't be surprised by that. He's referring to an Obama administration contradicting Mr. Durbin's account of a 2013 meeting in which he claimed, Durbin claimed, then-House Republican leader Eric Cantor told President Obama, I cannot even stand to look at you. Goes on to say, even Press Secretary Jay Carney said that didn't happen. But Mr. Durbin, Illinois Democrat, never backed down from his comment. Senator David Perdue of Georgia jumped in and said he didn't hear the president use that nasty word either. But Chuck Schumer said Mr. Cotton and Mr. Perdue were out of line to impugn Senator Durbin's integrity. Is whether you agree with him on the issue or not, he is one of the most honorable members of the Senate. Well, that doesn't say a lot for the Senate. That's all I can say. And then moving further, NBC News is now admitting that their source for the Trump S story was a Democratic congressional aide. And it reminded me very much, it reminded me a lot of it. Remember when the Tea Party was a lobbying outside the Congress against Obamacare, and it was, we were getting down to the deadline, and there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people out there with signs trying to stop, you know, the vote on Obamacare, trying to stop it from passing. And Nancy Pelosi led a delegation of Democratic congressmen through the crowd. Do you remember that? And then suddenly they claimed that they heard the N-word in the crowd. They just knew they did. They just knew. They heard the N-word, and they repeated it, and the press picked it up. And, of course, that meant that the Tea Party was racist. Now, no one could ever confirm by tape, by cell phone, all these cell phones people have, and they record. Nobody could ever hear that word, but, of course, they were sure they heard it. And that meant that the Tea Party was racist because they used that word. You know what my point is, don't you? You know what my point is. It just said the truth, it cannot be found from the press or the left. And sometimes it can't be found from Republicans either. It's pretty distressing. There is this a huge thing going on this week. We're going to be talking about it because the budget deadline is this Friday night. And, of course, Democrats want to attach DACA to it. I haven't gotten to the substance of what they are proposing and what's happened since then, and I'm going to do that. But coming up next, we're going to talk to Fred Flights about what happened on Friday, because another major event happened where the president signed off again on the Iran deal with some very big caveats. So what's going on? What's going on with the protesters? What's going on with the nuclear deal? And why is Europe so hell-bent on keeping this agreement? And why is McMaster? And why is, for that matter, the Secretary of State Tillerson? This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program that's been around for 25 years, and they have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $1 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money. Think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have a lot to offer? Well, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
I love it when people ask me for my help in their stewardship, but it's amazing how many times I realize that what they want is a better idea of chasing some fantasy about money and wealth. I'm also amazed at how greed has infiltrated the Christian community. Listen to Proverbs 12:11. It says, "He who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment." I hope that in your stewardship, you don't lack judgment, that your judgment is of God. Are you desiring to produce good fruit as evidence of good judgment in your stewardship?
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Just because you happen to be the mayor does not mean you get to shoot the squirrels. That's what the sheriff in Merced County, California says. Mayor Jim Price was at the local airfield the other day shooting at squirrels. Mr. Price is the mayor of Atwood, a small town in Northern California. He also runs a fuel business on the side at the airport, been having a problem with squirrels running onto the flight path. So he hauled out his gun, decided to knock off a few of the furry varmints. But it seems he came closer to shooting bystanders than squirrels. One guy was resting in his car reading a book when a bullet whizzed by. Turns out the mayor does not have a permit to shoot any sort of furry critter, nor does he have a permit to fire a gun on a flight path. Long story short, the sheriff confiscated the mayor's gun, and the mayor was slapped with a citation. Also had to give up his concealed carry permit. No word on the renegade squirrels. Nuts. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Now, good evening, Brad. And President Trump says he wants a new approach to Iran. And if not, he will pull the United States from the Iran deal in the next few months. The president wants Congress and European allies to demand of Iran access to all sites that international inspectors may request. Also, an end or an elimination to the sunset clauses in the Iran nuclear deal, among other concessions. In a statement, the president said, quote, "No one should doubt my word. If other nations fail to act during this time, I will terminate our deal with Iran. Those who, for whatever reason, choose not to work with us will be siding with the Iranian regime's nuclear ambitions and against the people of Iran and the peaceful nations of the world." The president says this is the last time he will agree to continue lifting sanctions tied to the nuclear agreement unless he secures those changes. That gives negotiators until about this spring to satisfy the president's demands. European allies that are also part of the Iran deal, the European Union, Germany, France, the United Kingdom, they say they're still reviewing the president's announcements. They have said the deal is working and that all parties should stick to it. In response to the president, Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, tweeted, quote, "The JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, is not renegotiable. Rather than repeating tired rhetoric, the U.S. must bring itself into full compliance just like Iran. Now, the Trump administration also announced sanctions not related to the nuclear agreement on other Iranian activities. The Treasury Department says it is targeting those in Iranian leadership who they say displayed appalling mistreatment to those who were demonstrating in the streets of Iran over the last few weeks, along with those responsible for Iran's ballistic missile program and what they say are Iran's other destabilizing activities. Brett.
All right. No doubt there is so much danger in the world. Who of us can deny that? We just talked about what happened in Hawaii over the weekend just because of the scare for North Korea. And so now we're talking about Iran, which is also a great threat. It's very complex. We know that President Obama made a deal with the Iranians that was very dangerous to all of us. But he did it with the help of someone like Senator Corkin and Senator Ben Cardin from Maryland. It really is a disgraceful episode in this nation's history. So President Trump inherited this Iran deal, and the way it is written, every 90 days, he has to recertify or not recertify the deal. So Friday was the next deadline, the 90-day certification, and we need to talk about what he did and what's going to happen with this. Fred Flights is joining us. He's the former CIA analyst. He's also Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs for the Center for Security Policy. And he joins us from D.C. this morning. Good morning, Fred.
Hey, Shandy. Good morning.
Hey, you know what? Before we get into the deal, by the way, we're having some technical problems this morning, so if you're hearing strange things, just forgive us. What's going on with the demonstrations? Because that story's gone silent.
Yeah, it's really a tragedy that the media is not giving it coverage. They may have begun for economic reasons. The people can't buy enough to eat. There's high inflation, very high unemployment. 60% of Iran's population is under 30, and they have very high unemployment. Meanwhile, they thought they were going to get enormous benefits from this nuclear deal with Iran, but the government squandered it on terrorism and military spending. Consider this. The Iranian government gave Hezbollah, their terrorist proxy, $830 million last year. And when the agreement was signed, the nuclear agreement in 2015, they gave Saddam Hussein's government in Syria a $1 billion line of credit. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, the people of Iran, some of them are selling their kidneys to raise money.
Oh, this is a horrendous story, Fred. And, you know, and yet we were told late last week, I heard from the Iran deal fans, that there's no connection between those people on the streets and the renewal of this deal. What would you say to that?
Well, you know, It's just appalling that the American left and Democrats and media and CNN, they're not going to report on these demonstrators. They don't want to report that this is an evil, despotic regime. And I think part of the reason is that they are in line with Barack Obama's basic rationale for the nuclear deal. It was a blame America rationale that treated Iran as a victim of past American policies instead of a state sponsor of terror and a rogue state. And you can't get the commentators on CNN or most in the Democratic Party to admit that. That's why they're stubbornly sticking with this, and they're sticking with the Iranian mullah, and I think it's shameful.
Well, I do, too. And then, of course, you have here in this country and in the White House, you have this battle behind the scenes, which makes no sense to most people. We have the National Security Advisor, McMaster, H.R. McMaster, twisting the president's arm, and really, from all accounts that I'm reading, insisting that the Iran deal be recertified, and he's got the partnership of the Secretary of State. So no matter what the president says, and certainly when he campaigned against this deal, and no matter how many bad things he points out, they seem to always prevail. What's going on there, Fred?
Well, look, I heard the press analysis of this a few minutes ago, and I have a different take. First of all, I think the president's decision to extend the deal was a mistake, but there's some other things going on that I believe have not been revealed, and I broke this on Fox News on Friday. First of all, and this is according to a friend of mine who met with the president in December, the president never expects Congress to fix the deal. In December, he was asked about that. You know, he gave Congress 90 days to fix the deal last October, and he told my friend, look, they're never going to fix the deal. I'm going to get out of it when I'm ready. But he also said something else. North Korea is my priority, and I don't want them both blowing up at the same time. I think that makes sense. I don't think he wants the chaos of breaking out of the deal, the initial chaos, when he also has to focus on the threat from North Korea firing missiles. And I think there's a third consideration, and this is for me. I think when the president backs out of the deal, he is going to want better officials in place to help him implement a new policy. That means in 120 days or 90 days, whatever the deadline is, I'm hoping Tillerson and McMaster will be gone. Maybe John Bolton will be National Security Advisor. That way he will have officials in place to implement his decision to kill the deal. So that if those three points are true, his decision doesn't bother him as much.
Well, I second your sentiment. I mean, I would love to see him clean house. I just pray for that, honestly, Fred, because it's unbelievable that these two men who serve him are not serving him. And then you add to that the fact that there's Senator Bob Corker, who made this despicable deal with the devil, with Ben Cardin, to get the Iran deal passed through the Senate. And now he, as I understand it, is lobbying the president to keep this deal and is claiming, you know, that he's working on some sort of a fix on it. But now we know that the fix actually is a fix where the president would not be allowed to do anything. That he would, I think it was like 51 votes only in the Senate could override his decision to pull out of the deal. So that's the fix. How could we know that and the president still entertain even conversations with Senator Corker knowing that?
Well, it's true that the Democrats and Republicans are, at least Corker and the Democrats want to change the U.S. commitment so future presidents can't back out of the deal without a majority vote by Congress. There are other fixes being contemplated to change to remove the sunset clauses so the deal never expires, to improve inspections. The inspections thing is okay, but it doesn't. These fixes don't address the main problems with the deal, the fact that Iran is allowed to enrich uranium at all. That was always a red line for every president until Barack Obama. It's enriching uranium with 5,000 centrifuges now. It's developing advanced centrifuges. But even if these changes made sense, there's no chance the Europeans or Iran will adopt them. I mean, it's basically either we pull out of the deal or we renegotiate it. Iran isn't going to renegotiate. It's fatally flawed. The only alternative is to kill the deal using a plan that Ambassador Bolton published in August. That's really the only ethical, responsible course on this arrangement.
Well, I think, Fred, it has to be repeated. And I know we've said this before, but it has to be repeated that the motivation, it appears, certainly for the European Union, is financial. And for the European partners, that would be, what, France and England and Germany.
Germany.
And I'm not sure who else. They're all pushing for this because there's big money to be made. And I would argue, in fact, let me just mention that one of the organizations, now in Iran, this is Iran, is called Sadat. It's Ayatollah Khomeini's holding company, and it's valued at an estimated $95 billion. And it's Reuters reported that particular company owned by the Khomeini isn't even allegedly been touched by the sanctions. There's so much corruption, financial corruption, and of course we've got Senator Bob Corker weighing in. And I have to say, Fred, during the election cycle, we learned a lot about where Senator Corker's financial interests are. I could go into a lot of detail, but I would just say this. That we know that he has enriched himself by a lot of the deals that have been made in the Senate and not to the good of the American people. So do you know anything about his financial dealings on Iran or what his connection is to this financially?
Oh, I don't. I hope that's not true, Sandy. I'm not familiar with that. But concerning Europe, Senator Kerry, when he was Secretary of State, he was very clever. He tried to lock the deal in with large trade agreements between Europe and with the United States. And there was a huge Boeing sale and a huge Airbus sale just after the agreement was finalized in early 2016. And that was no accident. It was to make it difficult to get out of the deal.
All right, so that's why the Europeans are balking and the European Union is so critical. What I have not asked you, Fred, is what I should have asked you up front. So tell us what the president actually did on Friday.
Well, there's two deadlines. On Friday, he had to decide whether to extend a sanctions waiver. He has to do that every 120 days. Today, the 15th, the president has to decide whether to recertify Iranian compliance. Now, he didn't do that in October. He's not going to do that again. But he essentially extended the deal on Friday when he granted the sanctions waiver, because removing the waiver would probably force the Iranians to back out of the agreement, and that would kill it. And that's really what I find objectionable. I think it's time to kill it.
Oh, of course, I do too. I just can't imagine anyone thinking that's rational, that this is a good deal. And as you know, it's interesting because McLaughlin and Associates did kind of a poll on how Americans feel about, certainly about the protesters. And it was a bipartisan thing. I don't know if you saw this, Fred, but here was the question. The Iran deal gave the repressive Iran regime $150 billion and lifted economic sanctions. Iran used this money to conquer Syria and support terrorism, leaving its country to suffer the economic consequences. Now, ordinary Iranians are demonstrating against their repressive regime. Do you approve or disapprove of the United States verbally supporting the right of Iranians to peacefully demonstrate against their regime and reimposing economic sanctions to stop the regime from killing and imprisoning innocent Iranians? That's the question that was asked 1,000 likely voters, by Democrats, Republicans, and independents. And the result was 63% were in favor. Trump voters supported the sanctions 73% to 12%. Clinton voters 56% to 18%. Then it goes on and on. And the same way with independent voters. So this is not, you know, the American people don't see it the way the European Union or the Congress sees it, at least the Corker and Cardin and some of the Democrats. And so it would be a popular thing to remove ourselves from that deal, don't you think?
I think it would be popular. Now, some people are saying, well, you know, the Europeans are going to be offended if we back out. But, Sandy, Europe doesn't have a leg to stand on when it comes to Europe, when it comes to Iran. Since European leaders refuse to stand with the demonstrators, President Trump is demonstrating leadership and moral clarity on the situation in Iran. And I think we need to shame the European leaders into doing the right thing and not let them intimidate us and lecture us that we can't get out of an agreement that is aiding and abetting a terrorist state.
It really is amazing. You know, I was just reading a lot of things about Iran just the last few days. I don't know if you know, I can't even pronounce the name. Her name is, I'll try, Mariam Marasadighi. And this is what she tweeted. As part of rapprochement, Iran regime officials and families were granted visas to the U.S. by Obama administration, while family of Iranian Americans who were proud U.S. citizens for decades were systematically denied. Trump administration should kick out regime from U.S. and let in Iranian people who love the U.S. Do you know anything about that, Fred?
I'm not familiar with that, but it doesn't surprise me. I think that, I mean, we know from shutting down an investigation of Hezbollah drug running on behalf of Iran and taking sanctions off of known terrorists. The Obama administration went to any length to get this agreement. So I find that very plausible.
All right. Well, listen, Fred, we appreciate so much you watching this situation. I know you pay attention to a lot more things, but it seems like lately, in the last year or so, all we've talked about is Iran. But I appreciate so much your diligence on this and also taking time to tell us about it. And by the way, Fred Flights is with Center for Security Policy. Fred, have you written on this anything lately?
I ran a piece on Fox News Opinion on Friday, and I should have another piece on this issue coming out today.
Okay, we'll put both of those on our Facebook page so people can read and share them. So thanks so much, Fred. It's great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Great to be here. Thank you.
All right. You know, in regard to Iran bringing in people, there's another story about a particular person. His name is Hossein Darakhshan. He's a pro-regime activist. Who is an expert in hacking into systems. He was arrested, by the way, in Tehran and put in prison, but he's a pro-regime person. So then they let him out, and now they have sent him to Washington, where he is moving in the inner circles of the press, trying to persuade the press and other persons to support the Iran deal. It's really disgraceful. He needs to be sent out. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Come see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Iranian citizens have launched protests against Iran's corrupt Islamic theocratic regime as the country reels from crippling sanctions that have thrust much of their population into joblessness and poverty. Unbeknownst to many, Iran is experiencing an outbreak of evangelism that has resulted in thousands of Iranians converting to Christianity day by day. Could it be the spread of the gospel is contributing to the hunger for freedom in the Iranian people? The Bible says freedom flows where the Spirit is Lord.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Join American Family Radio for In God We Trust, Saving a Sick America. This 30-minute radio special features Dr. Michael Brown, author, speaker, and radio host.
It's not too late for America. If we'll humble ourselves, if we'll pray, if we'll cry out for mercy, if we'll start beginning with us, not pointing the finger at the world, my sin, my coldness, my complacency, my lukewarmness, my compromise.
Listen this Wednesday morning at 11 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, friend. I'm Pastor Ron Jones, and I'm glad to tell you something good has come to American Family Radio. Something Good is a daily half-hour Bible teaching program that I'm hosting at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. In a world full of so much bad news, we're glad to bring you something good. Learn more at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org.
Once again, American Family Radio listeners have answered the call. If you recently gave to the Ministry of Preborn, thank you for helping thousands of abortion-minded mothers see their babies and hear their baby's heartbeat through ultrasound and choose life.
I saw the heartbeat, and that touched me strong. As soon as I heard my daughter's heartbeat, words cannot express that feeling I had.
At Preborn Clinics, 4 out of 5 abortion-minded mothers choose life when they see and hear their baby on an ultrasound. Thank you for giving. And you can still give by calling 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or visit AFR.net. Thank you again for partnering with American Family Radio and Preborn.
You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Cell phones across Hawaii warned this weekend that the islands were under ballistic missile attack. For roughly 40 minutes, no one was told that it was a false alarm. Now, federal and state authorities are investigating how such a thing could happen. A far more profitable line of inquiry, however, would be to examine how prepared is that state, and for that matter, all the others, to deal with the all-too-present danger of such an attack. What Hawaiians experienced as they scrambled to find ways to protect themselves is surely what the rest of us would discover at present. America is almost totally unprepared for, and consequently highly vulnerable to, ballistic missile threats that are increasing by the day. That's unacceptable. The Navy's Aegis missile defenses at sea and ashore could help. Ditto, civil defenses. Doing nothing is not an option. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I want to get more specific about Senator Bob Corker. Since Fred wasn't familiar with that, you know, he doesn't follow politics. He's into national security, but I do. I guess you knew that, right? All right, so this is a couple of things about Senator Corker. First of all, this was a report back in September, and it is that the law firm that was backing Luther Strange, who was the sitting senator, appointed by the governor there to replace Jeff Sessions. Remember that he was beaten in the primary by Justice Moore. All right. It was reported that the law firm that was backing Luther Strange set up a real sweetheart deal for Senator Bob Corker. And as I recall, it had to do with the development of, it was real estate development. So it was, it had a 13% interest clause in there. And so one of the things that I remember. Plus then, when the budget was I'm trying to figure out which piece of legislation this was to give it the name. The last time the Senate, which was just in the last month or so, it's just so much happening, decided on how it was a spending deal. The money, the tax reform. Sorry, there it is. Okay, the tax reform bill. Senator Bob Corker was on the committee writing the bill. And it just so happened that the tax bill contains this part that helps a very narrow segment of real estate developers and investors. Very small, but it specifically singles them out and gives them a great another sweetheart deal. And it just so happens that Senator Bob Corker is one of those few tiny group of people that belongs in the group of people that's going to benefit from that new tax bill. And so, but Senator Corker swears he had nothing to do with that. He had nothing to do with that, just so you remember. And then I know, but I haven't had a chance to look it up, that there were articles when this Iran deal, the Corker-Cardin deal was voted on, there were articles itemizing financial connections for Senator Corker and this deal. What else could explain it? Why would a sitting senator from the state of Tennessee be so adamant about passing a bill that was so dangerous and deadly to his own people, his own country, unless somehow there was some financial benefit? They always say, as you know, follow the money. And so I just don't know how the people of Tennessee gave us a person like Bob Corker, and how does he continue to function? How does Dick Durbin in Illinois continue to get away with his chicanery? But he does. And so that's the way it goes. That is the way it goes. I want to, because we talked in the first segment about the whole storm over the president allegedly using the word S-hole for various countries. We did a pretty complete conversation about that. The president says he didn't say that exact verbiage. I don't know if he did. I can just only tell you what I told you in the first segment, first of all, Dick Durbin is the one that reported it, and I know that he is a consummate liar. I just know he is. I don't feel uncomfortable saying that at all. I saw him do it when he ran for Senate, when I knew all the local issues. I saw him making things up out of whole cloth. And you remember, it was Senator Dick Durbin who actually called our soldiers. What did he say? That they were fighting in the manner of Pol Pot, who was the Cambodian dictator who brutally slaughtered his own people. Dick Durbin said disgraceful things about American soldiers. He's not exactly the example of careful verbiage, but he is, of course, as Senator Schumer says, he's such a, he's got as much integrity. What did he say? Is any senator in the Senate? Oh, my goodness. And then Sarah Huckabee Sanders had a dust-up with the Wall Street Journal on this, I think it was on Friday. She blasted them for fake news, and then she released audio proof. And basically, the Wall Street Journal reported that the president said, President Trump said, I probably have a very good relationship with Kim Jong-un. But according to the White House, President Trump said, I'd probably have a very good relationship with Kim Jong-un. Not, I probably have, but I'd probably have. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders released an audio to prove that what the president said was exactly, I'd probably have a very good relationship. So the Wall Street Journal is standing by its reporting in spite of the recording. You see how this goes? Do you see how this goes? It's almost like you can't trust anybody's recording these days. So now I want to get back to this issue of immigration, but I'm kind of torn here because I also wanted you to hear. We're going to get to immigration in just a second because I want you to be equipped with the real details of this proposal because it's coming up, probably will be discussed again this week, and you need to know what was happening in that meeting where the president allegedly said what he said. And of course, all that matters is the word that he said, nothing of the substance of the meeting, which is really what we should be talking about. Well, so over the weekend, including Chris on Fox News Sunday, talking about, you know, hinting as much as saying as often as possible. What a racist Donald Trump is. What a racist to say something like that. How dare he say that? Because no one on the earth has ever said that Haiti, you know, is a terrible place to live right now, including the gentleman that I've interviewed more than once, you former president of the Senate down there, crying really on this show about the conditions in Haiti. But of course, it's a terrible thing to say that it's in terrible condition. But I digress. Alveda King, the niece of Martin Luther King, was at that White House ceremony last week that totally you didn't even hear about, did you? It was a proclamation on the Martin Luther King Day. And so Alveda King was asked what she thought about all of this. And this is what she said.
Racism is just a word that's being bandied and thrown about and thrown at the president, in my opinion, unjustly. President Trump is not a racist. I've been with the president recently quite a bit, and when he signed the legislation making the historic site, Martin Luther King site in Atlanta, Georgia, a national park, it was introduced by Congressman John Lewis, and that, believe it or not, that's one thing the two of them did together. It took two to do it, and I'm so glad the president has done it. But what is so outrageous to call a man a racist who continues to acknowledge the significant work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., my uncle, in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And he puts his money where his mouth is. He puts his energy behind it. And in making America great again, you know, perhaps saying that in Haiti and in Africa, the, you know, Africa is a huge continent with many nations. There was no offense to the people, a lot of dignity to the people, but the holes in that some of their own leaders in Africa and Haiti have taken advantage of them and the area and done a disservice to the people. So, and again, Rachel, yes, to have a strong America, a compassionate America, who can really help nations like Haiti and all the African nations. African people are brilliant. Haitian people are brilliant, productive, and wonderful, and they deserve better. And I believe that President Trump not only understands that, but is making America great again so we can be a big help to clean up some of the holes across the world and in our own nation. He's doing a great job with prison reform and helping those prisoners come back to society to lead productive lives. Mm-hmm. He said to people on Medicaid, okay, you need assistance, that's a good thing, but you need to work as well. Have the dignity of a job. I Absolutely. Like all of those things. The little babies in the womb. I could go on and on about all the good things he's doing.
All right, that was Alveda King, and there you go. You heard what she had to say. Now, in regard to the substance of that conversation at that meeting, and the reason that the president got so angry is because Dick Durbin and the so-called gang of Amnesty, which, by the way, I should give you the names of those senators that are involved in that. It's Jeff Flake. It is Senator Durbin. Hang on a second. I'll get the whole list here. It's Cory Gardner. Here we go. And Michael Bennett. And Bob Menendez, who just escaped prison because of his corruption, because of a hung jury. Overwhelming evidence, just shocking, the men that are serving us in the Senate. So this gang of six, so trustworthy. Lindsey Graham probably is the most trustworthy person on this. And Lindsey Graham is all over the map, so I don't trust him. Jeff Flake, well, we'll talk about him in a second. Michael Bennett, Dick Durbin, Bob Menendez, and Cory Gardner. They came up with this great plan, which they presented to the president. And here was what the great plan actually said. This is kind of a synopsis by someone on the front lines of this. Amnesty for anyone brought to the U.S. as a minor, anyone, before June of 2012. And that's at least 3 million people. Amnesty for all of the parents who brought them here illegally. And that's as many as 6 million people. Eliminating the visa lottery, so they say they're eliminating it, by keeping half the visas for lottery countries, but adding some kind of eligibility requirement rather than just a random drawing. In other words, not eliminating it, but just acting like you're doing something about it. Giving the other half of the visas to everyone in the U.S. who has been granted temporary protected status, most of whom were here illegally when they got that status. And once everyone with temporary protected status has a visa, 10 to 15 years from now, all the visas in this category would go to the lottery countries. Fixing chain migration, the quote unquote fixing, by taking the 26,000 visas currently reserved for the adult children of lawful permanent residents and transferring them to the category for the spouses and minor children of lawful permanent residents. So essentially, lawful permanent residents would have to become citizens before they could bring their adult children. Securing the border, which is in quotes, by appropriating almost $1.6 billion, which is money that's already been appropriated for the wall, but conditioning that funding on all kinds of stuff. I could read you the whole thing, but for let me just give you one point. Using it to fix existing fencing. In other words, not expanding the fence at all, just fix what you've got. So you could have the 1.6 that's already been appropriated by the House if you agree to all of these stipulations. And so that's why the president got so angry with him, and that's why he asked them, why do you want people coming? Allegedly, he asked this question. I'm sure he did in part. Why would you want people coming in who are completely uneducated, unable to take care of themselves, from these terrible countries who don't give anything back to this country? We need a merit-based immigration system. That's what he's been saying repeatedly. So that is contrasted with another bill, which is a really good bill. This is a bill by Bob Gutlatt. He's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. It's H.R. 4760, House Bill 4760. It ends chain migration, really ends it. It cuts off law enforcement grants to sanctuary cities. It abolishes the diversity visa lottery. It authorizes a full border wall. It requires E-Verify and allows those who meet all DACA criteria to pay administrative and $1,000 border security fees to obtain a renewable 3-year work permit, but it doesn't give a green card or citizenship. Okay, so that's an excellent bill. That's the Gutlatt bill, and it is not the gang of amnesty. The six people that I mentioned to you before, this parade of horribles, Lindsey Graham, Jeff Flake, Michael Bennett, Dick Durbin, and Bob Menendez. And by the way, let me just say that if you want to weigh in on this and in support of this House Bill 4760, we're going to put Numbers USA, their link again on our Facebook page so that you can weigh in with them and through them, because they are the leading grassroots organization, very trustworthy on this situation. And so so there you go. That's what's happening, and that's what's at stake. The left wants millions of people amnestied. That thing I just gave you there is just a low estimate, 9 million. This is what they're demanding. And this is why the president responded saying, no, wait a second, nah. You know, he was hoping to deal in good faith, and many of us were concerned about some of the things he said in that meeting. That he didn't fully understand, but I'm thinking maybe now he gets it, that the people in that room are not there to do him any good or to reach some sort of an agreement. They are there to destroy him, and that's why they report the things they report, just as a Democratic staffer whispers, I guess, in Durbin's ear that the president allegedly said something with using the S word, and that became the headline. And then they turn around and they say that Donald Trump was on a roll. That meeting was so good. Why would he do this? What did he do? What did he do? I say the media and the insiders, the left, again, with the help of the right, not the right, the Republican establishment, like Senator Jeff Flake, who's so appalled by this. And we're finding out from an MSNBC interview that why he's thinking of challenging the president in 2020. And he's also saying in that interview, you know, how horrible the president is yet once again. So this is how it is. We've got these senators enriching themselves. They've got a good deal going, and they are desperate to get Donald Trump out. And it doesn't look good in 2018, I can tell you right now. We'll get into that on a different day. But that's the way it stands today. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.